I just feel like I've been around the block, ripping up fantasy stock, working around the clock. Look at the view from the top. Researching rookies a lot? No, I just be listening to pods, yeah. One in particular, I'm just a messenger, let me just pass on the rock. Browning, Brunning, Bruning, pronouncing ain't what he's doing. What he's doing is not losing, but infusing you with new things. And there's Dennis the Bennett, yeah. The man is a menace, yeah. Building a dynasty, some of the finest things, promise you, you won't regret it. Sly as a fox, cultured in pop, give him his props. Here is a thought, here is a box, and you cannot compare him at all, so don't even try. Careful with the news, but when you use a take, I take up Tony Fire, I mean Dyer, because anyone else is a huge mistake. Whoa, fantasy round table, fantasy round table, yeah. Fantasy round table, come take a look at the crown, baby. Hey, fantasy round table, fantasy round table, woo. Fantasy round table, come take a look at the crown, baby. Go.
What is going on, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Fantasy Football Roundtable Podcast, proud partners of the Pigskin Podcast Network. You can find them at pigskinpodnet on Twitter, or you can search the hashtag TPPN. As we talked about on Friday, we are joined by a special guest. We have got Christopher Harris with us. You can find him at Harris Football on Twitter. We are excited to have you here talking all kinds of football. Chris, I'm sure you get this question a lot. But how did you get started in the fantasy football industry?
How did I get started? I was finishing up a graduate degree in creative writing, and I had lived up a life of being like having a regular job. And all I really knew coming out of that graduate program was that I didn't want another real job. So I started doing, I had done some freelance writing previously. I started doing some more freelance writing. It sort of just worked its way. It was a good timing. It was really good timing. It was right around the time of fantasy football starting to get really big. So 2007, eight, something like that. And, it just worked my way into a job with Yahoo, worked my way into a job with ESPN. I was at ESPN for 8 years, and then now I've been on my own for seven.
So when you took the leap from ESPN, like having been a musician, I imagine like creative writing. And so people who are creative, you're seeking something. So what was missing for you that you were like, I'm going out on my own to fill this space for me? What was that there?
Well, I sort of was just leaving to leave. I was kind of just the overall, I liked it there. And obviously, like, who leaves that job? You know, like, that's crazy. That's, you know, and I stayed probably a little longer than I should have for exactly that reason. Like, who leaves that job? I just had reached a point where I was kind of doing the same thing every year, which is what happens. I don't blame them so much. It's just what happens at a big place. And I would try to get, like, work my way into a new little avenue that I could work. And sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. I had a podcast at ESPN for a few years that people might remember. It was the Fantasy Underground. And I was informed that that would not exist any longer for reasons unbeknownst to me. And I basically just got to the point where I was like, listen, this is fine, but life is finite. And I'm really just doing the same articles and the same videos and the same thing from year to year. And so I kind of left without a plan. I didn't leave so much expecting that I would get a really big podcast on my own. Honestly, it had to do with the time of year that I left. My contract happened to be up in the fall, right before the season, the 2015 season. And if I'd left in January, or if I'd left in March, I don't know what I would have done. But because football season was about to start and I had spent the whole summer writing their magazine and like being, you know, familiar with everything I thought was going to happen in 2015, I thought, all right, well, I'll give it a shot. I have no idea how to make a podcast or host one or get ads for one or anything. But I'll try, I'll learn. And then I assumed that by the end of the 2015 season, you know, whatever, 72 people would be listening and I'd be like, all right, I got to figure out what happens next in my career. And instead, within like just a few weeks, it was like a rocket ship. It took off. And so never looked back.
Well, congratulations. Do you ever listen back to those early ones that you produced yourself just to see how much the whole process has grown for you?
Which would be worse? Would it be worse that it was way different, or would it be worse that it was exactly the same?
Depends. I mean, obviously it was successful, so you were doing something right.
Sure. I think it probably wasn't so much the production, and it probably still isn't so much the production. I do produce it myself, and it's all done the same way. I do the whole thing in Audacity. You know, I put it all together. I do sound drops. The whole thing myself. So I don't know that it would sound that different, and maybe that's shameful.
Well, nothing wrong with sticking with what works. Yeah. All right. So let's kind of move on into we'll start to talk the fantasy football. We're in dynasty season.
Yeah.
And you know, it's startups, it's rookies, it's NFL news, what's happening. And so when I looked at your rankings, I'm going to preface this by saying, I live in Columbus, Ohio. I graduated from Ohio State. I'm an Ohio State fan. My wife has worked there for 22 years. Even I was surprised, though, to see Chris Olave as your wide receiver two. I think most people have him a little bit lower. What do you like most about his game, and how do you think he fits with what the Saints are going to do this year?
I want to preface the entire conversation just getting it out. And everybody who follows me and listens to my show knows that I am not a college scout. I don't have time during the NFL season to watch college football really at all. I'm not up on these dudes in the slightest bit. I know their names, and that's about it. My shtick is basically I watch every single NFL game.
Right.
On, you know, within so Sunday.
You like the sound of his name.
by Monday night on entering the season, I've watched all 16 games, right? So I am focused on that stuff. So what I do when it comes to pre-draft season, I'm kind of a blank. I'm tabula rasa. I am a blank slate for the people who do that work to write upon. And I have them all on my podcast. I have a bunch of draft experts who come on, and I say, what about this and what about that? And I play the dumb guy, which is convenient because I'm super dumb. And they kind of fill me in. And so what I've liked the most about Olave, and what I've been told about him, and then what I've been told other people who were in the industry like about him too, I have some friends that work for NFL organizations, is just like the combination of speed and polish. Obviously you saw him make a whole bunch of big plays, and that seems like that's available in New Orleans. And you know, from a dynasty perspective, I'm not going to assume that Jameis Winston's the quarterback, or that anything that's there right now resembles Michael Thomas might not be there in a year. So it does seem like big plays are going to be a part of his repertoire. And then as far as a route runner, and all anybody talks about is his smoothness and sort of natural ability. And that sounds good to me. I don't think it's a rookie draft among dynasty players where there are a lot of sure things. And so if you tell me I can line up and with one of those first few picks get a guy who probably doesn't have the ceiling of Jameson Williams, probably doesn't, but Jameson Williams has his own issues. But I think the floor is really high, and I'm sort of locking in, you know, the 2022 version of wide receiver two production, which is rare. I think these days there are a lot of wide receiver threes out there, not a lot of wide receiver twos. That's interesting to me.
Do you have any concerns now that they've added Jarvis Landry about having what his production might be in 2022?
So I reserve the right to change my mind, of course, because none of us really know anything yet.
I don't know if you've been on Twitter, Chris, but you're not allowed to change your mind.
I've just reserved it. I've just stamped it down. I now officially have reserved it. Listen, Jarvis Landry has been a very good player in his career. He was not a very good player last year, and I don't know if he's been anything like the Miami player he was for a few years now. I really liked him in his heyday, but I don't even understand exactly how he fits if we want to talk offensive scheme. Does Michael Thomas play the slot? Jarvis Landry can't play on the outside. I had the choice when I put Landry into my season-long ranks. Very low, you know, among the top 80 receivers, I put them like 68 or 72 or something. I had a choice to say, all right, this is a reason to lower Olave. And I consciously didn't make that choice. And really, that conversation seems like it's way more relevant for redraft than for dynasty, just because how long? I mean, Landry's not going to be there long, and Michael Thomas might not be there long. but your point is still taken. I mean, 2022 is the most important year in a dynasty league because I would like to win this year. So it's fair. And I don't have Olave real high in redraft ranks, but it just feels like his career floor is pretty high.
Yeah. I'm an Olave fan. Like at Dynasty Nerds, one of the things we've talked about Olave a lot is that he has a propensity to catch and fall. Like he doesn't do a lot after he catches the ball. And I was surprised that he was 6 foot tall when he went to the combine. Even he just sometimes he plays a lot smaller than that, but he is fast and he is a great route runner and he gets open and there's a home for that in the NFL and in fantasy.
Especially against zone. I mean, we're going back to the days of zone, man. Like defenses are playing back. You know, there's a reason why Christian Kirk just made a lot of money. I don't think Christian Kirk can beat a lot of outside corners one-on-one. I think it's proven that he couldn't, but right. Finding spots, running a good route, finding a spot against zone where a bunch of people are kind of responsible for you, but nobody's glued right to you. There's really a big place in that, in the NFL for that kind of player. Besides which I think we're convinced Olave's faster than someone like Kirk and can play on the outside.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's just a tiny bit bigger than Kirk, and so I think that will help him on the outside. So, did you guys have any questions about Olave?
I mean, other than how dare you?
Yeah.
No, I love it. I think the way that you worded the wide receiver two part, I think, is very underrated in what a lot of people look at Olave. Like, everybody just wants to go for the boom, and I think Olave is a very safe option. I mean, you talk about he just came back for his senior year at Ohio State. You mentioned the guys that you talked to said he's very polished. I think that comes with the age. He's a really good route runner. I think he is one of the few wide receivers, I think both actually the Ohio State guys, him and Garrett Wilson, are guys who could step on the field and immediately be good for their NFL teams. But everybody shoots for the moon, right? We know Drake London has this upside. Treylon Burks has this upside, where I do agree with you. Like, I think Chris Olave could immediately come in and be a wide receiver two for fantasy. And even if he never outproduces that, everybody, you have to have at least one wide receiver two in your lineup somewhere. Not everybody's rocking with Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, and DeAndre Hopkins as your starting wide receivers. You've got to have guys who you can fill into your roster. So I like that call a lot. This is more of a redraft question. There are a lot of rumors that Drew Brees might actually be considering coming back. Does that hurt your projection for him at all? Because I would assume that, you know, having Jameis Winston there and how much they likely would pass the ball with him would probably boost that offense a little bit more than a Drew Brees coming back out of, from, you know, practically being retired.
I don't think he's coming back. I think it was just a tweet. He was just kidding. Like, but we'll take it. We'll take the question on its face at first. I saw what that Jameis Winston offense looked like before he got hurt last year. There probably wasn't a more conservative offense in the league. They were like, please God, Jameis, do not hurt us. That, you know, they were really, really managing him, really tighten the reins to get crazy Jameis, the guy who on my show I call the wacky waving inflatable arm flailing tube man. He's a crazy man. He's probably the most aggressive player in the league at that position, and he's not good at it. So I don't even know if the offense would change that much. This offense probably isn't going to be gangbusters, go crazy down the field, even with much better receiving weapons, just because I don't think they're going to trust Jameis. It strikes me as Sean Payton felt that way, and his disciples will probably all feel that way too. But I would still rather have current contemporary Jameis Winston throwing the ball than washed Drew Brees, who we all know couldn't push the ball down the field really at all those last couple of years. I don't think we're going to have to worry about it though.
Yeah. Brees kind of like Ben Roethlisberger at the end. He had it all up here in the head. He just couldn't get it out the arm. And
yeah,
I mean, you see that with a lot of QBs.
And I think Brees was just reacting to all the talk about him not being back at NBC and people starting to talk shit and classify him with Jason Witten as a commentator.
You never know. He could have used that year away to go on the Tom Brady child sacrifice plan to maintain that youthful
That's the Peter Thiel, like literally getting the blood of the stem cells of young people injected. That's actually
so far it's just Tom Brady and Tom Cruise. They might expand it outside of a Tom.
That's right.
Well, sticking with wide receivers, so Pittsburgh is notorious for being able to identify and develop wide receivers. So they've got Deontay Johnson, they've got Chase Claypool. You know, they've let Hines Ward go years ago. They developed him. Antonio Brown, small school guy. Lots of guys have came through there. And so their reputation is all about the wide receiver development. With Deontay Johnson heading into the last year of his contract and Chase Claypool kind of being mediocre last year, they went out and drafted George Pickens and one of Matt Bruning's favorite guys, Calvin Austin III. So you have Austin at wide receiver 16. I think you have Pickens at wide receiver 8. Do you think that there's did the Steelers' ability to develop receivers, did that impact your rankings of those two guys at all after you took in all the information from people on your show?
I wanted it to, but I make a pretty clear and I break a promise basically to the listeners. I'm really not looking at consensus ranks, and I don't know whether that means I'm high on them or low on them. I don't know. I meant to. I do respect that development process. It's pretty clear that it's lasted over more than a decade. You forgot Juju, right? You didn't forget, right? But like Juju was part of it too.
Oh,
he
gone.
Just left.
Sure, well, yeah, but like, yeah. Mike Williams, Santonio Holmes,
it counts as development, and they're very, very good at it. So I definitely meant to. I think, you know, those two particular draftees from this year, they bring fun upside and also potential questions and concerns. Like Pickens feels like, for the good things that people say about George Pickens, why wasn't he a consensus first round pick? I think there was some thought that he might be at one point in his career. And it feels like there's just been something missing, and maybe the Steelers are awesome at bringing things that are missing out of players. And let's see about Chase Claypool, right? The thing you said before about Ben Roethlisberger was really smart, and maybe all that was missing last year was, sorry, we just can't go down the field, which is where you shine. Right. And you know, Pickens has to be kind of that perimeter player as well. And then, like, you tell me, is the other kid a wide receiver? Is he running back? Like, well, how are they going to use him? It struck me in the ranking of them that there's a negative just in that you're the second receiver your team took in this draft. But like maybe more valuable to an NFL team right away than to a fantasy team, because is he really a receiver, or is he going to be a slash type player, but not of the Debo sized player? But I don't know, Matt, you tell me what I'm missing on him.
He's going to be playing slot back Rhapsody is what he's going to do.
Slot back Rhapsody. There you go.
I mean, I just love him for his speed and his separation. And I am definitely counting a little bit on Pittsburgh developing him, but I do think Deontay is in his way. And I feel like with the way they use him and just kind of the player he is, I could, even though Pittsburgh typically doesn't re-sign those guys, I do think Deontay is more likely to be re-signed than like a Chase Claypool. I think they drafted George Pickens to replace Claypool, so then that would hurt Austin. I've heard a lot of people that I know are big Steelers fans and close to that think that he's mostly just going to be like their kick returner and their punt return right. guy. But I think just his speed and everything is dangerous. And who is this wide? I'm like dying to know who is the wide receiver that I'm thinking of. It's not Mike Williams. I said Mike Williams. That's the Chargers wide receiver. He was
Mike Wallace.
Mike Wallace. That's who Wallace, was. I was right, trying, yeah. like jumping on the internet trying to find it. So yeah. But yeah, I think he's a really good wide receiver. And I think the other reason I really like him too, I mean, he graded out very highly for me in my film grades, but it's also, you can get him so late in rookie drafts. Like, nobody's taken him before like the third, maybe fourth round. That's another reason why I'd be willing to bet on him with Pittsburgh's track record as well.
So we talked about, obviously Ben wasn't incredible last year as a passer. What are you expecting from this Pittsburgh pass offense with either Second Chance Mitch or Small Hands Pickett taking the place?
It's so funny. I'd love to hear what you guys said when you found out the Steelers had, you know, took Pickett as like clearly the QB1 in this draft, when that did not seem to be the consensus at all among the wise guys. You know, the Steelers are one of those organizations that the media just likes. They're a very popular team. They also are very, you know, just Mike Tomlin's very telegenic, and he give you a great quote, and they give a fair amount of access. And it feels to me that often they can sort of do no wrong. So if they've decided Kenny Pickett's the right guy, then what a story. Oh my God, he's going to stay in his university town and, you know, star for his for the same city. I didn't think Pickett was that level of prospect. And so I have a hard time, just because the Steelers took him in the first round, of thinking that he's not. I mean, the last time we took this long to get a second quarterback taken in the draft was the Chad Pennington year. Chad Pennington went a little later, actually, I think that year in the first round. And then there wasn't a pick for another quarterback till the third round. It strikes me that that's the likeliest thing. I don't know. Like Pennington, young Pennington was actually a good player before he hurt his shoulder and lost his fastball. He was a pretty good player, but like, you know, in the way that Kirk Cousins is a pretty good player, in the way that Andy Dalton is a pretty good player. I think it's a negative. I think no matter what you're talking about, if you're going to compare the Steeler quarterback situation this year and in the next couple of 3 years, to compare them to all those other superstar quarterbacks and what they do for their receivers, just in the AFC, it wouldn't go down on the like list of positives and negatives that everybody would make for a receiver. It wouldn't go down on the list of positives.
They might have the 16th best quarterback situation in the AFC.
It's possible, yeah, they do.
I'm really torn on it because I am a massive Browns fan, so I openly root for Steelers to fail all the time. And I was not a big Pickett fan either, but I do think he kind of fits that team. Like Tomlin has shown that he wants to build around his defense, right? Like he wants to win games with his defense. And I do think that matters when you get into the playoffs. So like if we take the fantasy football aspect out of it, if you go just strictly NFL, we see guys like Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, you know, they're sexy and exciting, but they haven't necessarily succeeded in the playoffs. It seems to be defense that is really what's winning these guys Super Bowls. And Kenny Pickett just looks like a guy. I hate to label the game manager thing, but I feel like that's why they picked him. He's ready to go now. I think the Steelers, they're always in competing. I don't think they've ever been below 500 under Mike Tomlin. And they're always trying. They're like almost always in the playoffs. They're always competing for a Super Bowl. So I think that's why they took him. Is just, hey, he's a guy that we know will come in there. He's not going to really throw that many interceptions. We've got great weapons around him. So all he's got to do is dump off. We'll rely on Najee, who's going to just get like, it seems like 50 catches a game and a crap ton of rushes, and then we're just going to rely on our defense. So I'm with you on the fantasy impact. I think is going to be not great. I would bet only one of those guys really gets. My bet would be Deontay. I think that he really carries or is at least able to help produce for fantasy numbers. But I think overall from an NFL perspective, it wasn't a horrible pick because I think was all the talk was that they were in on Malik Willis, but I mean, he's probably at least a year away from being a starter. And I don't know that they wanted to roll in with Mitch, which sucks for him too. Cause I think he really thought he was going to be a starter this year.
It's his personal lunches with Mike Tomlin.
Yeah.
But our lunches, I mean, here's what I would say. Like, is it true that defense wins in the playoffs? So if you can't go down the field, how are you going to win that Kansas City Buffalo game? You know, I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that anymore. Like, you know, the Rams had both, but the Rams beat the Buccaneers because with less than a minute to go after Tom Brady had come back and sucked the blood out of some children. Then, you know, Matthew Stafford hit a zero blitz deep bomb to Cooper Kupp that I would need a quarterback to be able to do. You might be right. And it's easy to draw large philosophical conclusions about the NFL from very small sample sizes. And unfortunately, even year to year, the NFL just changes an awful lot and defenses change their approaches. And we start pretending like we know things we don't know. You're right. I mean, I think at the very least they drafted the quarterback apparently who can come in and play right away. But if he comes in and plays right away, like Mac Jones, speaking as a Patriot fan, I just feel like I don't know that Mac Jones ever leads me to a Super Bowl unless I spend the money to surround him with an ungodly amount of talent.
Yeah, I mean, for me, when it came to Pickett, my biggest issue, well, there hasn't been a ton of successful quarterbacks with his hand size. I was more concerned with the fact that it took him 5 years to put up big numbers. Mm-hmm. And then that didn't happen until Jordan Addison came in. And I'm an old dude, so I remember Guy Benjamin, who was all that at Stanford. It just ended up that he was throwing the ball to James Lofton, who went on to have quite the stellar career, and Guy Benjamin just kind of faded away. So is that, to me, I wonder, is that what's in store for Kenny Pickett? Because it took him so long. He was, you know, what, 23 years old, I think. He had a lot of starts. He just wasn't great the first couple, 3 years when he was starting. So I like Pickett okay, and I like that the team invested in him. But by and large, I think the success of this class is going to come for super flex leagues in fantasy. I think the quarterbacks that were drafted are quarterback twos. They're guys, I think, in 3 years, you're going to look at them and say, I don't want this guy leading my team, but if he's my QB2 or my QB3, I'm fairly comfortable with that. And if I got impaired with somebody, I can make a run. You know, I'm talking about quarterbacks still, your ranking. So I thought they were kind of peculiar. You had Pickett and Willis back-to-back, and then a big gap, and then Desmond Ridder, and then another big gap. And then Matt Corral and Sam Howell. So draft capital caused Sam Howell to have a precipitous fall in rookie drafts. But it was interesting that you had Willis up there, who does seem to be the furthest away, or one of the further guys away from being ready to play. So what pushed him up and then caused, like, kind of, why were they so spread out? Like, how did Corral get down there? And
oh, I don't want in any rookie dynasty draft. I don't want anybody but Willis. I don't think I do. I mean, it depends on when, right? You'll take anybody at the right price, but he's the one. Like he's the one who, I don't know. Fine, 75% he turns into nothing, but the 25% he turns into something. Well, you just said they're all QB2s. He's the one who could be a QB1 if everything goes right, and he learns how to play and he manifests the laser rocket arm and the legs. I mean, especially the legs for fantasy purposes, he can get in the Trey Lance conversation. He can get all the reasons we get excited about mobile quarterbacks. It's right there. It's not going to be there this year. We know that it might have been had he gone to a different landing spot, but he goes to a place with an established starter, albeit one who vomited all over himself in the playoffs. And, you know, if there's sanity in Tennessee, they're looking for a way out. I think they found it if Willis develops. So, I mean, if anything, I was trying to balance in those ranks. I'm trying to balance. All right, the dude I really want is Willis. I don't really want, even in the Superflex League, I can find the generic QB2 anywhere. I can find him anywhere in a Superflex League. I can sometimes trade like roster flotsam for him. You know, I just don't feel like I need to stretch myself to get Sam Howell. Frankly, I don't feel like I need to stretch myself to get Kenny Pickett. I just put Pickett as high as I did because I think he will have that starting job. That rank might be wrong, but it might be too high on Pickett if it turns out that he's not ready. So the way I approach the quarterbacks for Dynasty this year is I don't think any of them are going to ever be good for fantasy, except for I give Willis a puncher's chance, and it's worth taking a second, late second, early third, mid third, you know, kind of draft choice on him. No higher than that, though.
Like crew here recently.
I lost that. Sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said, I think I just saw Roster Flotsam open for Motley Crew here recently.
Roster Flotsam. Yes, sir.
So a lot of people were high on Matt Corral, and in the pre-draft process, he was hampered by the injury and really didn't get to show anything. He also is, in my opinion, the one who kind of went to the worst quarterback situation or the worst team situation. I feel like a couple years ago, I was like, I think Matt Rhule is really going to be good, but he's kind of turned out to be not good. Do you have concerns that if there was any hope for Corral, that it's just going to be washed away here in the first contract with lousy coaching?
Well, you know, Matt Rhule could and maybe is one season away from not being there. And, you know, if you're drafting Corral in a rookie dynasty draft, you're not taking him for this year, obviously. Sam Darnold won't be there like long term. We're clearing out a lot of stuff that could be conceivably in the way. I mean, again, I don't want to palm myself off as someone who's watching all his college tape, but my impression from what everybody says is that he had some nice moments, but he had some real head scratching, weird read, terrible bouts of inaccuracy. Just like, maybe you could say he's got some of that same like low floor, high ceiling that Willis has, but without the crazy potential for, first of all, not the huge, huge cannon that we think Willis has, and then also not the potential to just win fantasy games by running. That just doesn't sound like somebody who's got that profile. Now, you guys can disagree with that profile, and I'm kind of being a composite of other people's opinions that they've told me, but that doesn't sound that interesting to me.
Sounds like Carolina got Sam Darnold's cousin. It's good that they have a spare just in case.
I mean, the question I have about Sam Darnold is, are we even at the point where his highs even seem high anymore?
Well, do you think he's going to end up, it sounds like you think he's going to remain the starter there in Carolina. It seems like they've decided they're not going to go try to trade for somebody, which is intriguing.
I don't think we would know one way or the other. No one's going to tell you, oh yeah, yeah, no, we're going to trade for Baker Mayfield in August. You just wait. You know, they're all trying to pretend like they've moved on.
After two games of watching Sam Darnold and his cousin try out for the job.
Or yeah, potentially two practices. But you know, that story is not over because Mayfield probably can't be on that roster. After what he said, and after, frankly, he's right, the team didn't treat him very well. I don't think Mayfield can be on that roster. So he's going to go somewhere. The question is, does he go somewhere where a Seattle, a Carolina, where there's a job just sitting there waiting for him to play this year? Or does he go somewhere where, you know, Tampa, where Brady's going to retire next year? Although, again, plasma children, we know, but like, you know, sit for a year and then, take over a situation. Not that I'm positive that he's great, although I think he's much, much better than Drew Lock and Sam Darnold. So like, yeah, I don't think
Pete clearly doesn't, because I don't know if you know, but he thinks Drew Lock was the best quarterback prospect in this class.
The thing is, like, we call him Petey Sunshine. We're all better off if we just never know what most of these guys ever say, because they don't have any incentive to tell us the truth. So Pete Carroll has no incentive to say, yeah, I really wish I had Baker Mayfield. You know, he's going to try to talk crap about everybody else and talk up his own guys, and then eventually he'll make a trade or not. He wasn't going to trade Russell Wilson until 5 minutes before it happened. He swore up and down.
My favorite was that he made that comment about, so I'm obviously diehard Broncos fan here in Colorado. A lot of tears were not shed when Drew got shipped out. But the same day that he made that comment about how great Drew Lock was, somebody in the Denver Broncos fan chat posted an article from Seattle that said Geno Smith was winning the competition so far.
I mean, but nobody's winning any competition yet because it hasn't started, because there's no real facts until August. And even then, there's not that many. And by then, we'll see about Mayfield.
So moving on to the running backs now, Breece Hall is the cherry of this class. He's the top guy. I think he landed in a good spot despite my desire for Michael Carter to get a real shot. I feel like that's going to be a 60-40 kind of proposition most of the year there. But Isaiah Spiller was the all through the run-up, even after his subpar testing, he was kind of the RB3. And like at Dynasty Nerds, we had him basically we had three tiers. There was Breece Hall, and then the next tier was Kenny Walker, then the next tier was Isaiah Spiller, then it was the rest of the guys. And then Spiller tested lousy, and he dropped so far on a lot of people's rankings. But you have him at RB4.
Yeah.
Is how much of that is situation? Like, do you feel like he's going to be able to step right into the role there with the Chargers and become that big back complement to Austin Eckler and get 175, 200 carries?
That's the question, and I don't think anybody really can answer it until we know for sure. I've just seen a parade of people who I knew, because I'd seen them play in the NFL. I knew they couldn't play. I've seen them all scale Mount Eckler and, you know, be the component back, the second back, the, you know, the one who would maybe take some of the heat off of Eckler. Like, I love the way the Chargers used Austin Eckler last year. I think the touchdowns are tough to assume that's, you know, high teens. That's probably rough. Not going to happen again, but I like the fact that they don't treat him like McCaffrey. They don't, he's a little guy. They don't beat him to hell. And to me, that means if you could find one guy, one other guy who could be relied upon consistently, that dude would have some value in what seems like a pretty good offense and what seems like the right kind of work in situation where most of the pass blocking pressure wouldn't be on you. And you could just kind of imagine the role over this past couple of years of all those other Charger running backs. If they all went into one guy, you'd be kind of interested. So I don't know for sure that Spiller can be that guy, but sure, it's not the worst of like platoon idea situations. And then I'm kind of with you guys. Like, if you're going to tell me the reason that who knows really why Spiller fell, it can be a whole bunch of different reasons, right? On different teams' boards, it can be for all sorts of different reasons. But if you're going to tell me that the reason was because they didn't like him in the underwear Olympics and they're going to ignore him actually playing football, like, I think that's an awesome buy opportunity. I think I'm much more willing to take the chance, accepting that, especially in other years where there were more sure things at running back, getting drafted behind borderline the fantasy MVP last year maybe isn't the most optimal situation, and Eckler isn't going anywhere for a while. And so there's maybe a little bit of a cap on him, but I'm comparing him to guys who I don't think are that great of prospects. Are all everybody else, it feels like, other than maybe the top four or five guys, are all in the best of all worlds with their NFL depth charts, probably situational players. You know, not people who you would ever throw the ball to, or not people who you'd ever feel a great consistently running between the tackles. That if you're gonna, you know, Spiller seemed like an all around prospect to me. And I don't even think he's that bad of a pass catcher. He's not going to get to do that much with the Chargers. So, like, maybe in some other year, this landing spot would kind of feel bad because he hasn't, he wouldn't have the opportunity to, like, flat out win a job and then win you a league. But given the rest of what's on the docket of that's available, if I'm, like, somewhere near the turn, maybe early second, I don't see a lot of other running backs that I like better. And I don't know that, I think we're through more receivers at that point than we are running backs, but I don't see any more sure thing receivers either. So again, maybe this is another Olave type thing where I'm going, I feel like I'm hitting a solid double here.
Yeah. I 1000% agree with you. I don't know why he's getting discounted so much. I do think some of it is what you just mentioned. Like, we built, I shouldn't say we, but people built him up so much, and then he goes out to the combine, doesn't test well, doesn't have a great pro day, and then he lands with the Chargers and people are just fading him. But you just mentioned they use Eckler in a really good way, but he's dealt with some injuries as well. And for me, and again, I like what you said earlier, I'm not a college scout, I'm not an NFL scout, I'm sitting on my couch here in Texas, I'm not working for an NFL organization, so I may not know at all what I'm talking about here. But for me, he graded out as like a top three receiving back in this class. Like, he's a very good receiving back. He posterized a kid in college going up and catching a ball. So if Eckler goes down, I do think he's the perfect complement for him. And what you just, like, you're getting him in the second round. Like, that has now been baked into his cost with how low he's going. Like, he never moved off my RB3 even going as late as he did. So I love the ranking for him. I've been completely befuddled by why he's fallen so much for so many people, because coming into the draft, he was right. Everybody's like, oh, it's definitely Breece Hall, and then is it going to be Spiller or Walker? And then James Cook, James Cook, Rashad White, there's somebody else that went, I can't remember now, Tyrion Davis Price, like, all these guys go super high. It's like, oh, well, Isaiah Spiller sucks now, let's drop him down to like RB15. And so, yeah, I was very curious. I was happy to see that you had him where you had him ranked.
Well, I have seen him rising in as my I'm in 20 dynasty leagues, so I'm in a lot of rookie drafts. And as time has passed, Spiller is rising back up to the end of the first round.
There's noise there, right? Like, I love noise when it kind of for dumb reasons, you know, it obfuscates what a much longer body of work tells you this guy is capable of. And then, you know, he doesn't run fast in not uniform clothing and suddenly he's bad. Like, and like, let's not get it twisted, because guys fall in the NFL draft for all kinds of reasons. You know, it's not all just because every 32 teams decided he wasn't worthy of a second round pick or a third round pick or whatever. Like, it can be medical red flags that we don't know about. It can be not about him at all, but rather we don't need a running back, or we just liked this running back a little bit more, but we're agonizing between Rashad White and Isaiah Spiller, and we picked Rashad White, and then, oh my God, he lasted another 60 picks. I love that what you're saying. I don't think that, I'm going to repeat myself, so I'm going to stop. But like, I don't think the evidence that he's made bad by the fact that he fell in the draft.
So did you do rookie rankings before the draft?
I did not.
Okay. I was just curious.
They would have been alphabetical. Yeah. He would have been very low among the running backs.
They're still ranking. No, I was just, because you have James Cook at 3. And so I was curious. I was wondering to myself how much draft capital and opportunity in Buffalo played into that ranking for you.
Yeah. I wouldn't have had Cook as high as Spiller. From the conversation, you guys know Brett Coleman, but Brett Coleman's a good pal of mine, and he came on the podcast and did the running backs. And he actually, I don't mean to light him up here, because I'm not positive he's the one who said this on the show, but I think he is. He liked Zamir White more than he liked James Cook. And Brett, if you hear this and I'm wrong, I apologize. Someone on my show said that, and Brett did the running back, so I thought it was him. But James Cook, there wasn't consensus on the better Georgia running back, I don't think. But you can't ignore landing with Josh Allen. You can't ignore that the skill set, if he really is Alvin Kamara light, then you can't ignore how well that fits and how much the running back has like maddeningly not been part of the pass game for these couple of years of Josh Allen's emergence. I just think you have to go, all right, well, situation counts for something. And I don't love to pretend that I know NFL situations before the seasons come along, because they change so much every year. But there are a few things we know from year to year, and it's starting to feel like Josh Allen as a top 3 quarterback is one of them, and as an offense that's going to be really aggressive is going to be one of them. And so in no way do I think Devin Singletary completely goes away. I think he's a good player, but there's something that Dalvin Cook potentially brings that they just haven't used Singletary yet, and that's receiving.
So I was going to ask you about that. You mentioned the kind of receiving. Do you think it's the personnel Buffalo has had or the scheme that they run? Because it didn't seem like running backs were a huge part, but now Brian Daboll's gone, so maybe
there's a lot of moving parts. Yeah, like I think it's a good point, and we never can know the truth. We don't know. Like they ran a lot of 4 wide, frankly. They occasionally ran 5 wide. It wasn't the 4 or 5 that we expected a lot of the time. Like Isaiah McKenzie all of a sudden like kills the Patriots and you're like, oh great, I had Gabe Davis that week. Sweet. So it's a lot of guys in the way that Arizona has a lot of guys, right? And therefore, is there any work there for a running back catching the ball? Like I wouldn't want to turn it into Harris went on that show and guaranteed James Cook would get 60 catches as a rookie. But we know that if he's taken in the second round of the NFL draft. He was, right?
Second round.
Right. So, like, if he's taking this, they see something in the skill set, and I don't think anybody looks at James Cook and thinks he's like Dalvin. He's going to run over guys in the middle of the field. He's got that quick twitch vision to make linebackers miss in the hole. Like, I don't think that's why you take him in the second round. I think you take him because he's a monster in space and you know, really fast, a big play player. So, boy, I think you have to build some, maybe not this year, but at some point, I think you have to build something around that skill set.
Yeah, I saw a couple people kind of working the theory that James Cook wasn't necessarily a satellite back, but he was more in the vein of the smaller workhorse backs like Devonta Freeman or Jamal Charles or Priest Holmes, those guys who carried a big load, but they just weren't as big. But they were able to, in their running process, avoid taking a lot of really big hits. Do you think, well, I guess you haven't really, it'll be curious to see moving forward if he, you know, is he going to get 200 carries? Because he is, kind of that Christian McCaffrey size, about 5 pounds lighter. So I get nervous about guys like that carrying the ball a lot.
A lot. The key is a lot. You know, we love those guys on a per play basis, and for fantasy purposes, they work out great. When it's Austin Eckler, what's Austin Eckler for 12 carries and 6 catches in a game, and you know, 3 of them were between the tackles. So it just isn't a lot of like unforeseen high impact collision. Bring it on. When it's Christian McCaffrey getting 30 plus, it's awesome for however long it lasts. It's awesome. And I've taken a raft of doo-doo over the past 2 years for not ranking Christian McCaffrey as my number one player, but I just don't like the way they use him. And in one way, I love the way they use him. Love it. Until I really don't like it at all. And then I truly don't like it. So
until you don't have a replacement in your lineup.
Yeah. There is none, right? There's no dude out there who's just sitting around going, hey, I'm guaranteed to get 30 touches every week. I mean, frankly, I don't love the way the Titans use Derrick Henry. I think there's something to be said, just like, can you please make him last the season and give him 7 fewer touches a game? I would just be so indebted. And they may have drafted the guy who could do that, right? They drafted another big running back. But anyway.
Well, the good news for the Panthers is they went and got Derrick Henry's backup to be Christian McCaffrey's backup now. So maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure that will work out great.
I have one more running back sad backfield question for you. So there was probably like a 48-hour period this offseason where we could really cheer for Antonio Gibson. And then J.D. McKissick changed his mind, decided Buffalo Winters were not for him, and went back. Right. And then they went and drafted Brian Robinson. And now, you know, I know what you said. It's coach speak. It's early. But there's a lot of talk. Hey, well, we have Brian Robinson and Gibson to split these first and second down reps, and then McKissick to come in, which sounds like a nightmare for those of us that were hopeful for Gibson. What do you look at when you look at that backfield right now?
I think it's a legitimately reason for worry and reason for nightmare. Coming out of his rookie year, I thought Antonio Gibson had a certain kind of really good rookie year. He didn't like flatten fantasy leagues or anything, but I just thought he looked really good. And for a college wide receiver to look that good as a running back, to just be decisive with vision in a way that you don't normally see, frankly, rookie running backs doing, let alone rookie wide receivers who've converted. It was great. And it felt like he dithered away quite a lot of goodwill last year. Just, he still looked really good when he didn't make mistakes, but my God, did he make mistakes? Just so you watched that tape game by game for Washington, and you'd see fumbles, and you'd see drops, and you'd see missed blocks. It seemed like the whole he's going to struggle because he was a collegiate wide receiver skipped a year. It didn't happen so much in his first year. And then, boy, I don't blame Washington for feeling like they needed to hedge somewhat with a not that expensive draft pick. I don't know that necessarily means Brian Robinson comes in and takes his job right away, but it very clearly, no one can argue it doesn't make the fuse shorter. You know, of course it does. You know, the whole reason Robinson's there is because Gibson wasn't reliable at all times. And if Gibson just had kind of the shakes for a little bit, or he was nursing an injury and couldn't get over it and it affected his play, like, he can prove all that. And I wouldn't be shocked that if he did become reliable, that Robinson doesn't play that much as a rookie. It's possible, but they've built in a parachute. And not only that, but this is turning into kind of the Patriots model, where you draft the replacement a year or two before the second contract comes along. Like, it seems like a screaming red flag that the second contract doesn't come for Gibson.
So my last question here, I want to jump back to James Cook, because I was not a fan of him either. Like you mentioning that Brett wasn't, I was not either. He was very lowly ranked, really good receiving back. I don't know that he's, at least in my opinion, a very good runner. And I mentioned it on Twitter, and I know a lot of people are saying it as well. Like, there's, I think, a little bit of fear in the fantasy community that he could be like CEH for us. And like, we all take him very high because of the situation. Great quarterback, right? You mentioned Josh Allen, never really lives up to that hype. So in a rookie draft, like, where would you feel comfortable taking him, knowing that obviously if he hits, you just hit on a gold mine, but if he doesn't, you may have unfortunately kind of have to eat that and keep him on your roster, never really get that value back.
Such a good question. He really does feel like the CEH. It seems like he does feel like the sucker play. I would, you know, definitely take the two running backs in front of him. They're probably one and two, only because there's not a sure thing wide receiver. I'm definitely taking those six wide receivers in front. I think I am. I'm not remembering my own ranks, but like Jahan Dotson, I guess there's a, you know, would I take Cook or Dotson? It might depend on what else I need. You know, it could, but I'd love to make him be the ninth pick, the 10th pick, even if you say Sky Moore goes in front of him because of situation. I don't think I want to go any higher than that. And I think you're agreeing. And then you go, oh, great. Except for I'm picking 10th or I'm picking 11th. And he did last. Am I really burning my pick here? And I think that's a fair question. And I think it's fine if somebody just wants to go, you know what? I'd rather hit the solid double. I'm going to take Spiller. I'm going to take a receiver who I, you know, Wandale Robinson. I'm going to take just somebody who I like. I think that's fine. I will say, I'm sure you guys have talked about just sort of the general quality of this skill position group. It's not high. It's not as high as it's been the past couple of years. And so do I feel like if I'm picking 11 and I take Cook, which I don't think I'm going to get him there, right? But let's just presume that he falls. Do I feel like I'm really missing out on someone that, you know, 2 years from now, people are going to go, you idiot, you should have known. I kind of don't. There are going to be guys who get taken in second rounds of rookie drafts who pop, but they're not going to have been consensus poppers, right? They're going to be like, well, we saw the upside, but we knew there were things that were wrong, but man, he cleared them up and he turned into a really good player. If I miss that guy because I took Josh Allen's new potential playmaking receiving back, it's a decision I can live with. But Matt, if your point is I'm picking 5 and I don't want to take James Cook, I think I'm right there with you.
Yeah, I think that's my big, I know Matt Fox was in a draft where he went 1-3. I've seen him go that early. And some, like, I'm with you. Like, if you're at that back part of the first round and then it's just kind of like, what do I do here? Like, I'm with you. Like, it, for me, it's like an argument between him. You got Christian Watson, who I think has a lot of questions as well, but great offense, you know, paired with Aaron Rodgers. George Pickens, we talked about earlier with Pittsburgh, develops wide receivers. So, like, yeah, he's sitting there. It's like, what do I do here? So I was curious to see where you wanted to go or where you would go with that. Because I said, I'm with you. I would not go as early as 1-5, even though we've seen him go in there. But back into the first round, I think it's a legitimate question to ask.
Yep.
Well, I think if nobody has any other questions, I'd like to move on to book talk.
Book talk.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited. Like, I'm throwing around a book in my head. And so I've been kind of tossing it out. And so having you on, you know, the guys have their Marvel corner where they'll talk about all things Marvel. And so since you're on and you've written some books, I thought I'd pick your brain a little bit, promote your books a little bit. Hopefully, you know, it feels like, you studied it. You got your MFA and you decided writing was going to be part of your identity. You got your MFA, did you start your first book while you were in college? Getting that? Did you just one day go, I'm going to write a book? And
I mean, I've wanted to write fiction since I was like 13 years old, I think is when I probably wrote my first book. It wasn't that good, but.
And then fantasy football got in the way.
I tried real hard. I didn't major in anything. I got an English minor, like a literature minor in undergrad, but I majored in practical things. And then I went out in my 20s and did practical things, but I wrote kind of on the side. And it was really right around when I turned 30 that I went, you know, again, limited time on this earth. Like, what? I really want to be a writer, so I'm going to go get this master's and be a better fiction writer. And the stuff that I wrote up to that point, I thought was really good then, but I look back on it now and I realize, you know, I needed more pages on my odometer. And so, you know, when you go to get a master's in fiction writing, I mean, they call it a terminal degree for a reason, because, you know, you can't get a PhD in it. And also you die when you finish it, your hopes of literary glory die. You know, it's not really a practical thing to say, cool, now I'm a fiction writer, you know, Hope I can eat. So it's something, you know, a lot of people say, your side hustle is fiction writing. And I'm like, I mean, actually, my side hustle is kind of fantasy, but it takes more time than the other thing. So, you know, the season's long and I got to do a bunch of stuff. You know, writing fiction is kind of it's how I have always processed my life and the ills of the world. And so, yeah, that's how I just am always writing something.
I think you're muted.
So you got,
I'm not. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I muted myself again. So you got 5 books listed on your site there. Which one was the first one? I thought so.
4, I think.
Oh no, I thought I saw 5.
I think I've only written 4. I'm pretty sure I've only written 4. Well, the first one's this book that I held up. It's got little football men on it. Can everybody see that?
Fought Rhapsody.
Yeah, the callback. It's about a pro football player. It's about a, I guess it's like a Danny Woodhead type.
Calvin Austin III.
He's trying to make the Detroit Lions and trying to stick with the Detroit Lions, and then it's basically a season in the life. And I think it's pretty good. I think it's pretty funny. That's the first one. That's the first one I ever got published. It did happen after I finished MFA school. I had gotten some short stories published in some literary journals. They weren't sports related or anything, but I started to write a baseball novel, and my agent at the time, she said, and I started to work for ESPN, and she said, great, great, great. A baseball novel. Sounds great. Remind me again what you're known for. And I said, well, I'm not really known for anything. And she said, well, if you're known for anything in your professional life, what is it? And I was like, well, football. And she said, yeah, football. And I took the hint. So I stopped writing the baseball novel and wrote a football novel instead.
They're good at their job like that, aren't they?
I don't have an agent now. Any agents that are listening to this, any literary agents, give me a holler. I haven't had an agent for my last 2 books. I've worked directly with a publisher who's great. So like, I'm not trying to, he's probably listening and going, what jerk. But yeah, it's good to have an agent.
Well, so your books span different genres. You got some suspense, like The Big Clear. That seems pretty cool. Coming of age with The War on Sound, post-apocalypse with Tulsa. Like, how do you develop your ideas, and like what helps you get from, hey, I think I got an idea, to the page and starting to write?
It's a hard question to answer. It's hard to know when you have an idea that it can. I've started writing things that I never finished, or that I never thought that I like abandoned because it just wasn't a book. I wrote a whole book that since Tulsa, I wrote a whole book that was short, and it's fine, but I don't really particularly ever want to publish it. I don't know. You have to want to spend a lot of time with it. You know, you're going to the book that I'm writing right now, I started in the fall of 2019, summer of 2019. So like, you have to want to spend years with this stupid, I mean, this is a long book, really long book, but you have to want to spend a lot of time with these people and these ideas and these characters. And probably the most important thing is not, I think this is really saleable. You know, the most important thing is that you're interested in the story and you want to spend a whole lot of time with the subject matter or the people and all of that, you know. The answer is probably different for each of my books. Like The Big Clear, I wanted to write kind of a revisionist. I'm a huge fan of Chinatown, you know, the movie Chinatown.
Right.
Huge fan. I sort of wanted to write a revisionist noir, neo-noir. And so it's kind of a action-y, like one long weekend in the life of someone who's kind of like a stoned private detective. War on Sound is about a band. It's about musicians trying to make it as a rock band in an era, like, you know, the sort of early teens, that where rock bands weren't making as much money and weren't getting signed as much. And I went and saw a billion shows and talked to a lot of musicians and wrote a big long book about that. Tulsa, I wanted to write, there was a lot of apocalypse. It's not really the apocalypse. It's just all the electricity goes out and nobody really knows why. And I thought that was a cool idea for a book. And my goal for it was to always stay with the main character from his perspective and never cut to that scene where the generals explain what happened and why it's out, or like what the world is like or anything. It would always just be from this super, super one person's view of it. So I guess the answer is different for different stories. That was boring. Sorry.
Oh, I didn't think it was boring at all.
All right. Thank you.
I love the, so having been a musician and wrote songs, my 17-year-old is a musician who's trying to figure out how to write songs. And so when he'll play something for me, the question I always ask him is, how does that make you feel?
Yeah.
And he'll be like, well, I don't know. I'm like, then it's not a good song. I'm like, but also you have to write a lot of songs. You have to write a lot of stuff before it starts making you feel any kind of emotion. And right. I'll always be like, so what do you call that? And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, did you give it a title? I'm like, you have to, writing songs is like developing a person and creating a, you've got to, like, when it, you have to feel something, you have to give it a name, and because that's how it grows. That's like the water and the sun for it. If you just are playing a riff and it's like, why won't this grow? It's because you're not feeding it. That's kind of my approach to it. But, well, Chris.
Yeah. It's a good point. It's a good analogy. I mean, especially because I spent so much time writing about music for that one long book of mine. Where Songs Come From is a very mysterious place, and so many of them are dead on arrival, and you can't figure out why. You're trying to breathe life into it, and you just can't. And probably that's true of books too.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you coming on with us today. That was really awesome. I love the work that you're doing and the journey that you're on. I'm looking forward to, you know, my own summer in Massachusetts someday.
Well, I'm off in the woods, doing my various things.
You and Stephen King.
This new book could not be less like Stephen King if I tried. I am writing a lot this summer. I'll hopefully play a fair amount of golf. Although as we've been recording this, the biggest thunderstorm of the year has been raging over me. I hope it didn't like boom into the microphone. I'm hoping that the weather is nice enough here in New England this summer to actually get out on the golf course a little bit too. That would be nice.
So Chris, if somehow someone hasn't heard of you, where can they find you and all of your work?
HarrisFootball.com. is where it all is. You can follow me on social media, any place at Harris Football. If you're interested at all in books, just go to Amazon. There's plenty of books there. I appreciate how many of my listeners who probably couldn't give two craps about my books have gotten them because they like me. That's really nice. But if people like subject matter, that would be good too.
Well, now we know too, thanks to what you shared. Decades from now, when your estate releases your final unpublished manuscript, well, no, you wrote it a long time ago. You just didn't want anyone to ever see it.
Oh, well, that one, yeah. That one I don't feel so weird about. This one that I'm working on now. What's crazy about this one is it's been, you know, getting on almost 3 years, and I'm getting there, but it's not that close to being done. It's already like 100 pages longer than my biggest book, which was already very long. And it's funny, we were talking about titles, because I have a lot of candidates for titles, but I don't really have a title for it yet. So the Word document for 3 years has been called Sprawling Future Epic. And I don't think I'm going to name the book Sprawling Future Epic. That would be very meta.
Now you have to.
Now you're on a podcast. You have to do that.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful. Hopefully the perfect title will, like this storm, hit me between the eyeballs.
That's how it works. That's just what it does.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for taking some time out of your day to join us and talk a little bit about football and everything. We really appreciate it. Everybody, we will be back again on Friday. Make sure to follow Chris at Harris Football and check out harrisfootball.com. You can get his books and everything else that he does for fantasy. We'll talk to you guys again soon.
Prepare for glory!
I don't know if you got your pop on there.
I came out the womb
wide
ready.
And he's hit the end zone for an unbelievable touchdown.
I would be honored if you played football for this team.
Throw it up above his head. They can't jump with me. Golly.
Only tackle him at the 40-yard line.
Who can make a play? I can.
make a play.